I'd like to start with making a brief clarification. I am Enrique Gino Medrano. I am the organizer, but I had a collaborator named Jeremy Green, I'll repeat this again, that helped me out with the entomology section. I'm a plant pathologist, he's an entomologist, and he deserves credit. It's not in the program, but he helped me out very much. So we'll start with Dr. Green. Are you ready to come on?
And I have a correction. Gino did all the work. I didn't do anything. So it's correct in the program. It's my job to kick off this this workshop talking about this bug problem in cotton and how pathogens may have some pretty significant interactions with bug feeding. So I'm going to attempt to set it up, and my colleagues following me will actually give you the meat of the program, give you the information. I'm going to set up why we have a problem with bugs in cotton. I think most folks are aware of why we have that, but we're going to go through that, give it a good introduction, and then we're going to get into to talking about managing bugs and boll rotting pathogens without a crystal ball. So, you know, we don't have crystal balls, so we have to manage bugs and pathogens without being able to predict the future. So we'll kind of come back to that. The main species, of course, that we're dealing with, we're talking about the bug complex that is important in cotton in terms of boll feeding pests are the stink bugs and plant bug complex. As far as the stink bugs, we've certainly got several species that are important. The green stink bug, the southern green stink bug, and the brown stink bug comprise the majority of the important species. There are a number of other species of stink bugs that are becoming more and more important, and we'll probably see things continue to change and evolve over the years. As far as the plant bugs, we certainly have Lygus linearis as an important species, more so in the Mid-South, and I'll kind of get into some of the regional differences with these bug complex. The clouded plant bug and, to a lesser extent, the cotton flea hopper. So we're dealing with numerous species that are important. I've showed this slide before at meetings, but the reasons for the bug problem are pretty much outlined on this slide. And they all deal with the central theme of reduced broad-spectrum insecticide use, which also removes coincidental control of this bug complex. If we're not spraying these broad-spectrum insecticides for major pests such as boll weevil and budworm and things like that, we remove that coincidental control that we have benefited from for years and years on bugs. The first example being boll weevil eradication. This is the most up-to-date chart I could find online. It actually does not include progress from 2008 and 2009. But as you can see, there's a lot of post-eradication activities. Just about all of the southeast is eradicated, and just about every other cotton-growing area in the United States across the belt is either moving rapidly towards eradication or is already at functional eradication. So we no longer spray for boll weevils for the most part. Borrowed this slide from a colleague, a good friend of mine in Georgia, Dr. Philip Roberts, that illustrates how that has changed what we do in cotton. We no longer spray 16 times for boll weevil with harsh chemistries. And you can see we get into active eradication, things bump around a little bit, and then when we're boll weevil free, we're just not putting out those harsh chemicals numerous times. Another reason for the reduction of broad-spectrum insecticides is selective insecticides, and these could be the soft foliar chemistries and could also be, to a greater extent, the BT cotton that we've seen since 1996. Again, expanding on his slide, you start at 1996 here, and you can see the reduction has continued, and we just don't use a lot of broad-spectrum insecticides in cotton anymore, so bugs have benefited from that reduction. This slide, again, from the proceedings, just shows the trend for one group, the tobacco budworm bollworm complex, and it's steadily been declining for the entire U.S. over the years. And then, of course, things that have raised the economic injury level, decreasing price, increasing cost of inputs, and so forth, have made some of those insecticide applications go away. Weather impacts. This kind of gets into the interactions of pathogens and boll feeding bugs. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but warmer winters in recent years, perhaps greater overwintering success for these bugs, a lot of precipitation variation as well. So a lot of different things going on. Nurseries for bugs. We've got early maturing soybean. We've got increased corn acreage. We've got CRP land. So there are a lot of different things we do early in the season that that benefit these populations of bugs. You know, late burn downs. This is setting things up for our problems. CRP ground, untimely production practices, and early soybeans all contribute to alternate host plants for these bug pests and allowing them to get going early. I've used this slide before as well. You know, CRP land for set up for 10 years. This is showing a chart from 2004. There's a lot of green dots there representing 500 acres for each dot. So there's a lot of ground laid out with a lot of wild host plants that offer these nursery setups for bugs. Insecticide resistance development, control difficulties, you know, we're rapidly moving in that area, so there's a lot of different things that we need to be aware of. As far as plant bugs and stink bugs, this is kind of a diluted picture across the entire U.S., but you can see there is a trend for increasing the number of insecticides for both the stink bug and the plant bug complexes. And there was a dramatic upturn here very recently. All right, so the bug complex by region, what are we dealing with in the Southeast? What are we dealing with in the Mid-South? Most of my experience is in those two regions, so that's about all I have. When you get into Texas and West, it's a different ball game. So in the Southeast, stink bugs are our most important complex of these bugs. Certainly the eradication of the weevil has provided the stage for that problem, and that happened some time ago. Plant bugs are really not a general problem for us. You have to move into a northern Alabama and west into the Mid-South to get into issues with plant bugs. But there are issues with field size being small in the Southeast and a lot of alternate host plants being available for stink bugs. So stink bugs are certainly our pest. Peanuts are certainly an extremely important host for stink bugs in the Southeast. A lot of acres in Georgia, a lot of acres in South Carolina, and so forth. And the agri landscape is changing, diversity, abundance of cultivated hosts. When you get into the Mid-South, plant bugs are certainly the most important player in this group of boll feeding bugs. And as they kind of move into the later eradication of the boll weevil, they're going to see more and more problems with plant bugs as well that have been historically a problem in the early season and now are more of a mid and late season pest as well. The increased corn acreage, I think, in the Mid-South has been extremely important for plant bug abundance. All right, so what we know as entomologists, from our perspective, the bug problem is certainly real, and it will likely continue to persist or even become more pronounced in the future. We know the current relative efficacies of insecticides and how and when to use them effectively. We do recognize research-based treatment thresholds and use the and offer the best available guidelines for protecting yield and fiber quality. And we do have a pretty good idea that these disease organisms are vectored by bugs, exacerbating their damage potential. So what we don't know as entomologists is how to predict the level of bugs by year, region, field. I've given up on trying to predict, oh, this is going to be a bad stink bug year, because every time I say that, it's not. And vice versa as well. So how to identify dirty bugs from clean bugs. We don't know how to do that. This is my attempt at a joke. The third point, environmental conditions facilitate interactions between bugs and pathogens. What are those? Can we define those? And then to expand on that, how yet to effectively use all the parameters related to bugs and pathogens to model a better solution. So I hope I'm going to hear some answers here shortly. All right, so you know, we don't have a crystal ball. Is prediction possible? We make a lot of attempts at predicting problems with weather, insects, pathogens, and so forth. Success rate's not really great on that. Interactions are even tougher to predict. So we've got a lot of challenges ahead of us. There are models for predicting things, forecasting things, degree days, and then I just quickly thought about what would be some of the things that we could potentially add up that might give us some sort of key to use as a threshold: heat units plus rainfall amount, Julian date plus number of bugs or damage or pathogen level perhaps will give us some sort of model to work on. So I've gone through that very quickly. I think my time's just about up. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to entertain some of those, but I think you're going to get more information from the subsequent speakers.
We do have time for questions.
You didn't define what you do currently to state bugs in terms of what you use the threshold or anything that you have that's useful.
Yeah, didn't get into that. We do have some research-based thresholds based upon injury symptoms to bowls. We recommend pulling a certain number of bowls, a certain size, out of a cotton field on a weekly basis and looking for symptoms of feeding from bugs. We've recently worked as a group in the Southeast on dynamic thresholds. For years now, we've had a static threshold of 20% injury to bowls for stink bugs in the Southeast. We recently refined that with a lot of trials looking at a dynamic approach where that threshold changes over time based upon the proportion of susceptible bolls in the field. First couple weeks of bloom, you don't have a lot of susceptible bolls in the field, so we can stand a little more injury. The third to fourth to fifth to sixth week of bloom, you have a larger proportion of bolls that are susceptible to bug feeding, so we've determined that you need to be more aggressive in controlling stink bugs during that period of growth. And then towards the end of the fruiting season, the seventh, eighth, ninth week of bloom, bolls are large in size. The most bowls in the largest proportion of bowls in the field are not susceptible to significant injury, so you can stand a little more injury there as well. So we have defined that in what we're calling the dynamic threshold, and that will be in recommendations.
Is there a reason you don't use bug counts?
Is there a reason? Yeah, it's very difficult to find bugs.
So if we needed an earlier threshold from the disease standpoint, that really wouldn't be a good way to predict the problem coming. From a disease standpoint, we needed something earlier than 20% injury to bowls for to head off a disease problem. It really wouldn't be easy to do that with bug counts.
Right, right.
Well, you'd have to sample other sources, I guess.
Right.
Whether insects come
from. Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, it's very challenging.
The age of the bowl in terms of susceptibility, when does it become resistant?
When it's about 25 days from anthesis, it's pretty much immune to significant damage for the most part.
Older than even a weevil puncture.
Right. All right. Thanks.
Very good.